police showed up and they negotiated. He had sent his girlfriend out and the three kids out, and finally the police negotiated for him to come out. Coming backwards with his hands up in the air, they put his hands behind his neck. They put his hands behind his neck, and he was backing up, and then they start shooting him with the beanbag.
As a young man within this community, adding that I'm African American, there's already issues with police. But after these incidents, I'm even more scared. I'd rather trust a gang member than you. And the reason why I trust them is because at least I know that I have to do something to them for them to shoot me.
Is it police department policy to handcuff and leave a person unattended after being shot by a police officer?
He only made a certain movement after they shot him with the beanbag. Then they shot him with the shotgun, with the gun, after he responded to the beanbag shootings. And they had dogs come in to bite on him to make sure that he was dead.
When you kill somebody, you should not get your job back. Because I bet you, if one of us kill each other, they're going to put us in jail. Why won't they put them in jail?
I'm not safe. I'm seriously not safe. And I will not be safe until the killing stops. And even when the killing stopped, because I thought after Kendrick James, I was like, okay, the killing stopped, you know. Next thing I know, this is my homeboy, somebody that, you know, he was like a big brother to me. He gets killed. I'm not safe on the streets anymore. I'm too scared to walk home after practice. I used to want to be a police officer, but no more. I don't want to be a police officer. I would never want to be a police officer.
On January 29th of 2010, Aaron Campbell was shot in the back and killed by Portland police officer Ronald Froschauer. Less than 2 weeks later, the grand jury decided there was no wrongdoing on the part of the officer that killed Campbell. Now, family members and the community are asking that the Portland police be held accountable for the shooting of Aaron Campbell and other victims of police violence. Tonight, on Circle A Radio, we speak with Catherine and Rasan, members of the Fire Froschauer campaign, who are asking for the permanent firing of Officer Froschauer and other killer cops.
Aaron Campbell had a brother who was in the hospital, suffering from an illness and terminal with this illness, on a day where he actually decided to get a little bit of rest, and he went home. In the midst of him going home from the hospital, they got a phone call that his brother had passed. The minute he took absence from his brother, then he died. Aaron Campbell had been by the side of his brother all the way through this, distraught. Some of his family members around him were concerned about his condition and concerned about some of his behavior, and in not knowing who or what else to do or who to call to get a handle or to help or assist Aaron with some of his mental anguish that he was going through, they called the police. The police showed up on the scene, having communications with Aaron Campbell via phone and text messaging. And ultimately, Aaron Campbell decided to come out with his hands up. Upon the police seeing Aaron Campbell, and for some reason being threatened by his presence, there are different reports as far as the chronology of how the event took place, but there was a canine unit, apparently, a dog that was ordered to attack Aaron Campbell, and in the midst of the dog attacking Aaron Campbell trying to defend himself from the dog and get away from the dog, he was shot with beanbag rifles 3 or 4 times, and then ultimately they began to open fire on him and killing him right there with his back turned. There was a discussion or talk about him having a weapon. Some of the family members apparently had reported that he had a weapon, and this was what was used as justification for Aaron's murder, is that we thought and that he was reaching for a weapon. This is a classic excuse or justification that's used by police officers in the Portland area, that they thought that someone was reaching for a weapon and then one ends up dead.
Aaron Campbell didn't die upon receiving the bullet wounds. He was actually left to bleed out on the sidewalk for 30 minutes. They would not allow the, I think at that point paramedics had been called. They would not allow the paramedics to get close to him. And so it wasn't just that he was shot. It was that this obvious neglect of him, leaving him there to bleed out and die, I think is a part of, another part of this that's really important. Here was someone who was suicidal, who needed support and care, whose brother had died that morning. I mean, here we are in a situation in which someone needs support and instead is murdered brutally. It's just an indication of the kind of institution that we're dealing with.
Aaron Campbell's death is an unfortunately familiar situation for Portland residents. 4 years ago, Sheriff Deputy Brett Burton, Portland Police Officer Sergeant Kyle Nice, and Portland Police Officer Chris Humphreys beat to death 42-year-old James Chassie. The Fire Fresh Hour campaign is also asking that the officers involved in Chassie's death be held accountable for their actions.
This is Jason Renault of the Mental Health Association of Portland.
I knew James when he was a kid. We went to school together, and first I heard of it was the regular news shows that someone had been killed downtown by police officers, and I later found out it was my friend. It was an extraordinary case because there is so much public information about it, and it's notable because of the amount of media that came out and the amount of information that the district attorney released from the grand jury testimony. And also because of who Jim was, and I'll speak about both of those parts. On September 17th, 2006, Jim was probably decompensating in his mental illness. And when a person who has his illness, which was schizophrenia, is decompensating, it's really hard for them to communicate with strangers or really anyone, but certainly with strangers, and certainly with strangers who are assertive or aggressive towards him. Jim was very shy, a very inward-looking person, and was uncomfortable with most communication. He was walking near his home late in the afternoon, about 4:30 in the afternoon. Maybe he was walking home, we don't know. He drew the attention of some police officers, and we don't really know why. The police officers later testified and gave reasons why they were attracted to him, but that wasn't borne out by any evidence. Somehow, the police officers decided that he needed to be detained, and when they jumped out of their car and shouted at him, he tried to step away or run away. And he didn't get more than 2 or 3 feet before he was tackled by a police officer named Christopher Humphrey. And it probably was in that tackle and the subsequent kicks to his torso that did most of the damage. There were two autopsies, one by the medical examiner and the other by the families that hired a former medical examiner to do another autopsy. But they were roughly the same, that Jim suffered many broken bones, broken ribs and broken collarbone, many contusions, external injuries, and then massive internal injuries, which really caused him to bleed to death inside of his body. He was clearly very badly injured when the police had hogtied him on the street. Police officers were there, fire department, and emergency medical, but somehow, and it's unclear who made the decision, but a decision was made that Jim didn't need to go to a hospital. He'd been tasered several times, been beaten continuously. Many witnesses to this testify that they were sickened by the screams and by the thumps and thuds that they heard. Police officers who beat him drove him to jail. Nurses in the jail decided he was too sick to be admitted to jail and that the police officers should take him to a hospital. The police officers chose not to take him to an emergency room, but instead to take him to a psychiatric hospital, still hogtied in the back of the car, to Gresham. And Jim died en route. They called for an ambulance. They tried to resuscitate him, but he was dead.
You just heard from Jason Renault, and we opened the show with Portlanders talking about the tragic murders of Aaron Campbell, Kendra James, and James Jahar Perez at the hands of Portland police. Tonight you will hear from Rahsaan Muhammad and Catherine Cates of the Fire Frash Hour campaign. They're working to ensure that Ronald Frash Hour and all killer cops are fired. But first, we need to ask for your support.
This is about the middle of KBOO's fall membership drive. Please help support Circle A Radio at www.kboo.fm or call 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. My name's Erin Yankee. I'm one of the collective members of Circle A Radio.
I'm Brianna, another member of Circle A Radio here on KBOO in Portland. We're taking some time today to ask you to show your support by providing whatever monetary donation you can to us. A basic membership here at the station is only $40. Provides you with a lot of membership benefits, as well as letting us know that you're listening and you're liking what you hear. You get to hear a lot of news information that's not on the other stations and that you only get here at KBOO. So please show your support, KBOO.FM, or call us 503-232-8818.
This is Trillium Shannon. I'm also with Circle A Radio, and we've been bringing you this program for 10 years now. So if you like hearing things from a unique perspective, such as we bring you here people from our local, national, and international movements for justice. Our local movement for police accountability is who we've been talking with tonight. If you like hearing that kind of information, please support Circle A Radio by calling 503-232-8818 and donate what you're able. If you can do it on your card, you can do a monthly deduction from checking like I do. It's really easy and painless, and the nice volunteer on the other end of the line will help you set that up. If you're outside of Portland, call 1-877-500-5266, and that's toll free, or you can just log on at kboo.fm and donate now.
That donation really keeps this radio station going. It keeps these programs on the air. It keeps these volunteers here to be able to give you this radio that you're listening to. So 503-232-8818. If you're out of town, you can call 877-500-5266 or log on to kboo.fm and show your support.
We now return to Circle A Radio, where we're interviewing members of the Fire Fresh Hour campaign.
My name is Rahsaan Muhammad. I got involved with the Fire Fresh Hour campaign just right after the murder of Aaron Campbell. A family member, a cousin of Aaron Campbell, called me and asked me to get involved with helping with some of the speaking and organizing behind doing something to answer that.
I'm Catherine Cates, and I am also a member of the Fire Fresh Hour campaign. The campaign came out of a group of folks that were meeting before Aaron Campbell's murder, looking at the Portland Police Association, also known as the PPA's, contract negotiations that were coming up. And then Aaron Campbell was murdered by the Portland Police. And so we started creating this campaign, calling not just for Officer Ronald Freshour's firing, but for the firing of all killer police officers.
What happened after that as far as community organizing, and bring us up to what's happening now?
So much happened so quickly. Aaron Campbell was shot, and then I think it was just a month later, Jackie Collins was shot, who was a homeless man who was in Washington Park. It looks like he was cutting himself in the bathroom, and he came out with an X-Acto knife. Officer Waters, he was called into the scene, and he ended up shooting Jackie Collins and killing him. And then pretty soon after that was the murder of Keaton Otis. And Keaton Otis was a young black man who was pulled over by the gang task force. They pulled him over because he had a hoodie on, and he was slouching down in his car, which they thought meant that he was a member of a gang. And we have to remember that this was an environment of two murders already having happened really recently before this. He was pulled over. They attempted to pull him out of the window of the car, grabbed him through the window of the car, tased him. And then at that point, shots rang out. And he did have a gun. The police claim that he shot at the police officers. It hasn't been particularly shown. I know that the AMA and other members of the community have questioned that story coming out of the police, but he was shot and killed at that time. Again, he was left on the scene. I think his body was left on the scene for up to 4 hours before it was moved or tended to, which parallels what happened with Aaron Campbell. All of those things happened in a relatively short amount of time. There are several mobilizations that happened. Jesse Jackson came to town the night before Ronald Freshour is the person who shot Aaron Campbell, was put back on the force and let back onto work. And so the AMA held a rally that morning when Ronald Freshour went back on the job. Nothing happened at that point. And so people continued to have rallies. There was a series of rallies that came out of the Black Bloc, or marches, I should say, through downtown. There are some in the Northeast. The community has just continued to mobilize. So out of that fire, Freshour, we have three main demands that came out of community meetings, a forum that was held, and just conversations we were having with people. And those demands were fire Ronald Freshour, and so that's the name of our campaign, and all killer cops. All of the cops that were involved with the police murders. One of the main folks we were also talking about is Chris Humphreys. Chris Humphreys was a key person in the murder of James Chassie. He also last year beanbagged a 12-year-old woman of color on the MAX. We've also been calling for the contract negotiations that are happening between the city and the Portland Police Association right now to be open. And the reason why we feel like it's important for people to know what's happening in those contract negotiations is because there are things in the contract, such as something called Clause 22, which is about discipline and arbitration. And this stuff is like very, so when we talk about it, we know it's like very policy oriented and it feels very abstract. But what this clause does is it basically creates a huge loophole that enables the police to be able to bring people who are fired back onto the force through a process called mandatory arbitration. We've been calling for that clause to be taken out of the contract because we want to fire police officers and we want to ensure that they stay fired. And so that clause is making it impossible for us to actually hold police officers who use excessive force in our communities accountable. So those are the three demands that we've been out on the street corners talking to people about. The first demand is fire Freshour and all killer cops. The second demand is to have the contract negotiations open. And the third demand is to take mandatory arbitration, which is Clause 22, out of the police contract.
I think that a lot of people get discouraged about getting involved in this kind of work because, as you said, it's not anything new in Portland or anywhere else in the United States that cops are killing people in our communities. And as far as I know, this would be something really unique if Freshour is fired. Has that ever happened in the history of the Portland Police Association?
No. Not that we know of.
We do have a very unique situation in the city here. I mean, just with the turnover of the leadership of the Portland Police in the last 3 months or so, I mean, they're still calling all of this a restructuring. So the Portland Police, according to their words, in the contract negotiations, are considering themselves under a restructuring and also the city of Portland under a restructuring. So it's very important for us to be at these contract negotiations and to be aware, because we want to know how the cards fall when the restructuring is over. And we want to be aware and to report to the citizenry what that restructuring is after everything settles.
This is Brianna
with Circle A Radio, asking you to log on to kboo.fm and show your support. Show your support for your community, for what you believe in, what you're hearing tonight. Show that you have some interest in your community and the activities that are going on here that you don't get to hear on other stations. You can call 503-232-8818. If you're outside of the Portland area, you can call toll free 877-500-5266, and let us know that you're out there, that you're listening, that you want to support this local nonprofit radio station.
Hi, this is Erin Yankee from Circle A Radio, and the thing is that we know you're out there. Maybe you don't get to listen to us every other Wednesday, but we have this fabulous website where you can download and listen to so much amazing programming that happens on KBOO, and we get the numbers. We have such exciting news. We've had this show up. It took us a little while to get it posted about the U.S. Social Forum, but in 2 weeks, we've had 121 people listen and download the show about Take Back the Land and Max Ramo and the National Month of Action that Take Back the Land did. We've had 965 downloads and people listening to it. The Oscar Grant Police Accountability Show has had 1,362 people download and listen to that. That was not more than 3 months ago that we did that program. We know that you listen. We know you take the time to download. I'm sure you're talking about it. And so now we just need your help in supporting us to be able to continue to do the work that we can tell that you appreciate. 503-232-8818 is the local number. 1-877-500-5266 is the out-of-town number. Also, for you out-of-towners, www.kboo.fm is a great place to donate to KBOO and become a member.
Right, and this is Trillium here. I just want to let you guys know that it's so very important to have this media arm of our movement, and KBOO Community Radio is just that. So as you've seen the right-wing organizing, they use their radio as a form to get people involved. We need to actually step it up here on the left. We need to be able to support community outlets like KBOO Radio and all these other wonderful community media that Portland has. The way you can do that right now is by calling 503-232-8818 or 877-500-5266. And you can donate what you are able. Our basic membership is still $40, but we do encourage you to give $5 a month if you can, and that's $60 for the year. Or if you're able, you know, $10 a month, $120 a year will really help us out to keep this station pumping out the information you need to be involved in your community and to form a more just society right here at home in Portland, Oregon. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. You can also go online at kboo.fm.
And as Trillia mentioned, if you call 503-232-8818, you can talk with one of our volunteers on the line about setting up a monthly deduction from your checking account. It's easy, relatively painless. You can give $5 a month, $10 a month, however much you can afford to just slip out of your checking account. And that donation really keeps this radio station going. So 503-232-8818. If you're out of town, you can call 877-500-5266 or log on to kboo.fm and show your support.
Also, as Trillium said earlier, this is Circle A Radio's 10-year anniversary. We've been working really hard for a long time. Trillium, since the very beginning, very first show when it was a live call-in talk show. So not only is it important for these stories to get told, but we have this unique opportunity to have an institutional memory. With this show tonight, with the Fire Fresh Hour campaign, we're appreciating how many things are similar about all the other different police brutality campaigns, but also how things have changed. We get to address that with people who've been in the community doing activist work for a long time. So if you want to support us in that work, please call us at 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266, also kboo.fm. We know you use the website a lot to download the shows, to comment on what we do, to communicate with us about things, and you can also use it to help support us financially.
Some of the voices that you're hearing tonight on Circle A Radio are people who have been really active in the community for a long time. Some of them are folks who've been guests on Circle A Radio before, and some of them are brand new to this program. We really go out there on the streets, and we are involved in the social justice movement so that we can bring you the voices of people who are really out there doing it. Call us now if you want to support that. You know, maybe you are not able to march. Maybe that's not the way you can contribute, but you can definitely look within and see what you can give to support KBOO. Any level is fine. We have a low-income membership at $20 a year. If we get five of you given $20 a year, that's $100 right there. So let's join together as a community, figure out what you're able to give, whether that's $20, $100, $1,000. Give us a call at 503-232-8818, 877-500-5266.
We now return to Catherine with the Fire Fresh Hour campaign.
What we're doing is we're going to the corners. The first corner we went to was MLK and Killingsworth. And we've had signs. And we've been talking to people. We've been flyering and talking to people in the community and trying to build awareness about what's happening and just hear what people have to say. We've been doing mobile flyerings where we walk around the neighborhood and talk to people. We've done an actual cop watch patrol and gone out and talked to people and done cop watching at the same time. So we've just been trying to be in the community, talking to people about what's going on, and encouraging people to talk to other folks in their communities to come out and demonstrate. And then depending on what's happening, to call Sam Adams and to call the city to pressure them to fire these police officers. Now, one thing that's been interesting about being on the corners for us and why we've chosen this strategy is that by being there, there's been so many people that have come up to us and been like, yeah, my cousin was murdered by the police, or I have a family member that was murdered by the police years ago, or I was brutalized by the police, and over and over and over again, to the point that it becomes really impossible to believe that it's this bad apple syndrome that people say, that, oh, it's just these bad apples that are on the force. But then why is it overwhelmingly one that we get honks over and over again in support of holding the police accountable, and we have people continuously coming up to us telling us their experiences about what's happening? You know, it's not just one or two police officers. It's the structure of the entire institution.
The issue of police violence became real polarized very quick. And you had the AMA that jumped out on the forefront. You had Renee Ward with Everyday People that really was in contact and made it their effort to get in contact with the families and grieving and have their representation. So there was a number of rallies that all took place. I mean, it was, you know, at one point for 3 weeks straight, I think it was two rallies a week. So as we were involved in all of these rallies, or most of these rallies, we were starting to see kind of two camps being formed in terms of ideology and response, with the AMA approach through legislation, through policy, and things of that nature. But then you had just normal people who were angry at the police brutality, who were angry at the behavior of the police. This is not new. This has been taking place in Portland for quite a long time. I mean, I'm 35 years old. I'm a native here, and police brutality has always been an issue. It has had its peaks and its valleys, but it's always been an issue. So in the midst of that, we wanted to kind of give a, I don't want to say centerline approach, but we wanted to encourage all of these responses to start to facilitate the communication between these different camps. So, for example, facilitating dialogue and discussions between anarchists and clergy members, people who are associated with all different walks of life, to get us all communicating, because we all agreed, and the common thread was that the Portland Police Association and their policies are out of whack. So we began to really research and take a look at, well, what is causing these things? So two things that I wanted to point out or highlight with regards to this was that we saw that the actual policy itself and the way police officers are trained in this city, they're trained to shoot to kill. They're not trained to shoot to wound. So we found that the policy, the actual training of the police officers has to have a look, or we have to take a serious look at that, as well as the mandatory arbitration issue. The mandatory arbitration issue is kind of a catch-22, because if there is no court precedence, for example, if there is no officer that has been disciplined legally and charged with a crime, or just simply disciplined and that discipline stuck in mandatory arbitration, since there's no court precedence for disciplining an officer, fire an officer for wrongdoing, they always revert back to the fact that, well, without precedence, we really have no basis to uphold the recommendation for the firing of an officer. So at this time, we feel the pressure is necessary.
That was Rahsaan Muhammad and Catherine Cates of the Fire Frash Hour campaign. You're listening to Circle A Radio on KBOO Community Radio.
On Saturday, September 25th, over 100 people gathered at Pioneer Square to participate in a rally organized by the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. The AMA Coalition for Justice and Police Reform is working towards these five goals. a federal investigation by the Justice Department to include criminal and civil rights violations, as well as a federal audit of patterns and practices of the Portland Police Bureau, strengthening the Independent Police Review Division and the Citizen Review Committee with the goal of adding power to compel testimony. A full review of the Bureau's excessive force and deadly force policies and training with diverse citizen participation for the purpose of making recommendations to change policies and training. The Oregon State Legislature narrowing the language of the state stature for deadly force used by police officers and establishing a special prosecutor for police excessive force and deadly force cases. Here are some voices of community members who showed up to demand police accountability.
As an African American living in Portland, growing up in Portland, I've seen my share of police brutality, police murders, shooting, and killing unarmed men.
My name is Martha, and I am here because the deaths at police hands have hurt the entire community. But I especially would like to send a message to police officers of sound mind and good heart. You have some bad coworkers. Please stand up. Say who they are, and get them out of your system.
I'm Lewis Hall, First Unitarian Church. The horrific killing of James Chassie impacts me a lot. The person who was responsible, Christopher Humphrey, yes, should have been summarily fired for that atrocity. Worse, to me, is that he is still in a position of, sure, he's temporarily, I guess, sidelined, but the beanbag incident of the girl, I mean, it's just the lack of accountability that really angers me, and there's got to be justice, and so that's why I'm here.
Whether you're homeless or in a situation where you're poor, that's the group that gets isolated and targeted. And the homeless community in Portland has a long history of being specifically targeted by the Portland police just because they're so visible out in the community. It's hard when they concentrate services in a particular area and then come turn around and persecute people for being in that area. Look at the sidewalk ordinance. Look at the sit lie to, whatever you want to call it. You know, we all know what that's about, and that's about targeting groups that they deem undesirable.
We now return to Catherine with the Fire Fresh Hour campaign.
What has happened is that there is an internal police board, and it was called, it's like the police board on uses of excessive force. They reviewed his case, and they made a recommendation, and this was leaked to the press, so we aren't even supposed to know that this happened. It was leaked, and their recommendation was that Ronald Freshar be fired and that several of the other officers involved be severely disciplined. And so that was sent on to Sam Adams and Chief of Police Mike Reese, who basically at this point, it's in their hands. And so our understanding is that that discipline has come through Chief Reese, that it has been told to Ronald Freshour that he is going to be fired. But that doesn't mean that he is fired. So what happens now is he has an opportunity to go in front of Chief Reese, as do all the other police officers that have been disciplined, and plead for his case. And, you know, he can say, I've been on the force for a long time, yada, yada, whatever. And Chief Reese in that moment has the opportunity to say, okay, I'm not going to fire you. So that has not happened. So even if he gets there and Chief Reese says, no, you're fired, at that point, what will happen is that the labor union will file an appeal. And this is when the contract negotiations come into play, and this is why this is really, really confusing. So basically what will happen is they'll file an appeal, and it'll go to an arbitrator. And like Rasan explained, this arbitrator, who is not elected, who is basically a bureaucrat that has no accountability to the community at all, works off of precedent. And the precedent is to bring police officers back onto the force. So, for example, 7 years ago, Scott McAllister pulled over an unarmed African-American woman named Kendra James and shot her in that police incident. He was then suspended for 6 months without pay, and it was appealed. And it went through an arbitrator, and the arbitrator decided that that discipline was too extreme, put him back on the force, with all of the back pay of all of the months he'd been taken off of the force. So if that could happen, we know that the reality of what's going to happen with Ronald Freshour is if this clause of arbitration stays in the contract, that he's going to be put right back on the force because there's nothing stopping an arbitrator at this point. There's no precedent. There's nothing else aside from the community putting pressure on the city to pull that clause out of the contract that's going to keep him and other people that are disciplined off of the force. And so we realize what this does is this says to police officers in our community that they have basic impunity at this point to do and act however they want. In an interesting turn of events, basically on September 5th, a young man was brutally beaten by police in Dallas, Texas, and it was caught on camera. Within days of the footage becoming available to the public, most of those police officers were immediately fired. Several of them are now actually getting investigated and charged with hate crimes. This is in Dallas, Texas. As someone that is from that state, it's not known for its progressiveness. So it's interesting to me that Ronald Freshour shot and killed Aaron Campbell in January. We are now in September and he's not even officially fired. And if he gets fired, he's probably going to get put back on the force. What does that say about how we hold police officers accountable in our communities? What does that say to police officers of the kind of behavior that they can do in our communities and what's going to happen to them? Nothing. Nothing's going to happen to them. And we think that that's a major problem because it gives officers almost complete immunity to do whatever they want to do.
Another thing, to a point on arbitration, what we learned in the recent contract negotiation meeting was that a process of striking, as it's called, for the selection of the arbitrator, this is a could be considered a red tape issue. There's a process of selection of the arbitrators that both the PPA and the City of Portland have to agree on. And then once they agree on a selection of 5 to 7 arbitrators, then they're subject to the arbitrator's schedule itself. So in a lot of instances, they want particular arbitrators that are very popular, that are in high demand. And so the waiting for a lot of this arbitration takes place, and the selection process is just sitting in limbo. And at this time, these officers are still on the force in a lot of cases, and not in Freshour's case, but as Catherine had pointed out, look how long it's taken for any discipline to take place. So it points to the structure of this. And some of the open debate and dialogue that we hope to bring up in the future is, should a law enforcement agency or the main law enforcement agency in a city even be structured to have a labor union? It's something to consider. I mean, law enforcement is not like a trade. So when you're talking about a private entity of law enforcement or an entity that walks a line between a public and private dance, because taxpayer dollars do pay for these police officers, yet they have independent representation legally with regards to their union to negotiate with the city, to hamstring the city, and in a case where they are dissatisfied, they can strike. So when you look in terms of law enforcement for a city and its duty to be protectors of the citizenry, yet they appear to be nothing more than tax collectors when you look at the fines that they're imposing with regards to further infractions that we have, and occasionally will assault and brutalize and kill citizens. So we have to get a handle on this system at this time right now, because they're making mistakes today on a frequency that we haven't seen in quite some time. And if we don't, as a city, organize and unify around this, we'll have a very rogue law enforcement agency in this beautiful, peaceful city that just doesn't balance out.
This is our fall membership drive. Welcome. We just have a real quick message for you, which is if you haven't already picked up that phone to donate to KBOO and Circle A Radio, now's your chance. Give us a call. 503-232-8818 is the local number to call, or 877-500-5266. If you're in Washington or Idaho or Paris, France, or wherever you may be, just give us a call toll-free or log on to kboo.fm. How about signing up for $10 a month? Just give us $120 of your hard-earned money this year. We'll really appreciate that.
And $120 a month sounds a little bit scary. For me, I work part-time, I make barely above minimum wage. But if you break it down, if you look at it monthly, that's $10 a month. A little over an hour of your workday. You get to give to something that supports the community that you're a part of. 503-232-8818. Talk to one of our volunteers standing by to hear how you can donate that, how you can support this community. You can also check out kboo.fm. You can look at previous shows that the Circle A Collective has done. You can also click on that donate button and give what you can. And what you can may only be $5, $10. What you can might be $100. All of that is going to keeping the station alive, to keeping these voices on the air.
KBOO is a volunteer-run station. We have about 500 volunteers. We have about 10 to 12 paid staff people to help organize those volunteers. And we are member-supported. This is one of the times of the year where we just come straight up ask you for it. We don't sell weird ads for weird things and then have products cost more. We are direct, and here we are to ask you for money. www.kboo.fm, 503-232-8818, or 1-877-500-5266.
We're going to get back to our interview with members of the Fire Fresh Hour campaign shortly, but real quick, go ahead and log on, kboo.fm, or call us here at the studio, 503-232-8818, and show your support for Circle A Radio and for KBOO Radio.
We now go back to our interview with Catherine from the Fire Fresh Hour campaign. She's answering the question, what kind of community support do you need?
Right now, the contract negotiations are going on. So the police association and the city negotiate every 4 years for their contract. So whatever gets negotiated this term, we're stuck with for 4 years. The first round started Friday, September 17th. And we were out in front of the negotiations and we were inside listening. And we're going to continue to put pressure on the city to pull Clause 22 out of the police association contract. And so what we're asking for folks is for folks to come down to the contract negotiations and stand with us and pressure the city to pull this clause out and to ensure that the contract negotiations are continued to be public. What's happening is the negotiations are going to be split. They're going to be split between when the city holds them, which they're saying will be quote unquote open to the public. The catch is that in the first 15 minutes of the negotiations happening, they went into a closed session in which the public was not allowed to be at. We have no idea what they talked about in that closed session. They can go into closed session at any point and lock the public out of those negotiations. That's a closed contract negotiation. We want them to be completely open and transparent to the public. From what we're seeing, they're not even looking at taking Clause 22 out of the contract. And so we really have to push right now while the negotiations are going on. Calling Sam Adams is a big thing that folks can do right now. Putting pressure right now and letting the city know we're watching this and that they need to actually hold the police accountable is really, really important. Having people call and say, you know, we want mandatory arbitration to be taken out of the contract. We want you to fire Freshhauer now and ensure that he stays fired. And we want these negotiations to be open. And that means no closed door negotiations at all. Negotiations are happening October 9th. And that's when the PPA is going to be holding it at their venue. So we have no idea if those are going to be open to the public or not. So we're asking folks to come out and support us. We're not going to ignore that this is happening. We're not going to continue to let police officers operate with impunity in our communities.
We also understand that a large segment of our citizenry here don't ever feel that they are a target of the Portland Police Association. At the same time, there are targeted citizens and targeted groups of people within this city who are profiled and have a higher chance of having interactions with the police in their everyday life. What we're asking is for people to actually take a look at the policing situation in this city, to send emails, asking questions, making demands when we take a look at an issue on the news, on the radio, where we have what looks or appears to be a clear case of murder, write letters, make phone calls, show up at demonstrations, support the families. That is something that really is always needed whenever a family is grieving, no matter how the media would like to paint this individual. The loss of life, is that a justified price to pay for a traffic violation? From our position, that is never acceptable. So when you find yourself who doesn't, you don't consider yourself one who is targeted by the police, but you find yourself pulled over in a situation, that's when you learn or encounter the things that we're having this show and discussing. So a general culture of not just taking for granted that the police are doing their job, but to actually help them to do their job by monitoring, by watching. Anytime you see one car pulled over with four police officers on that car, anytime you see what appears to be a houseless individual that's being apprehended by five or six police officers, care enough to stop, pull out your phone, pull out a camera, start to film or pretend that you're filming to put a check on law enforcement that we are actually paying for. So just a general concern among the citizenry.
People taking out their phones, watching what the police does, one, it makes the police realize that they're on camera, right? And it makes them sometimes change their behavior. Two, if they don't change their behavior, we have documentation of what they're doing. We have the possibility to let other people know. We have a way of holding them accountable. And so it's really, really important that people be willing to stop and watch the police and take footage of what they're doing. It's going to make a huge difference. It already is. It's interesting because in New York right now, there's somebody who's facing felony charges for videotaping the police. And we know that there's someone here, Mike, who won a case against the police in Portland because he was videotaping them. And they arrested him, and he won a case against them. In Portland, we can tape the police. Just like Rasan said, that is going to go a long way to building a culture that we can really start holding police accountable until we can start having better dialogues about how we actually keep our community safe. Because some of what we're seeing is that this is a systemic problem, right? And that our communities, a lot of our communities, aren't actually being kept safe. They're being patrolled and they're being brutalized, but they're not being kept safe. The needs of the community aren't being dealt with. We all have needs as the community. So how can we better work together and empower ourselves to fulfill those needs that we have around safety and security for ourselves?
In situations where we find human beings doing wrong, it's all of our duty to step in. And so I think that another piece that can be discussed perhaps at another time is while we're monitoring the police and their activity, we have to also be monitoring our own activity and our own behavior. I mean, we have to be a citizenry that begin to police ourselves at the same time that we ask the law enforcement and the Portland Police Association here to back off of us. We can't have this thing where the police can always resort to pointing out behavior that could lead or justify them to these acts. This is the time we feel to put a stop to this. While if you look at the relationship that is happening, there's a split and a divide between the city of Portland and the Portland Police Association. The Portland Police Association really targets youth at high school football games, basketball games, anytime that there are youth on the corners. So as parents, you really should take a look at this issue, because if you ask your children out here, have you had any altercation with the police? Have you ever been harassed by the police? You might be surprised at some of the stories that you find that your children haven't even told you about police harassment. If youth are harassed by police, what do they begin to feel about police? And then what behavior do they take on? They take on a natural duality of anti-police or against the police. So neither one of these positions really help this situation. So I encourage the citizens and parents especially to take a look at it and to get involved.
Rose City Cop Watch has trainings on cop watching and know your rights in the police. And I would encourage anyone out there that's interested, have a cop watch training, have a know your rights training at your house. Invite your friends, invite your neighbors, set up a neighborhood cop watch. Make sure that you and your friends and your family know what your rights are when it comes to the police, because this is going to make a huge difference for you.
How can people get in touch with the Fire Fresh Hour campaign if they want to join up with it or figure out what you guys are doing or when the times and dates are to come out and support?
We have an email address. It's Fire, F-I-R-E, Fresh Hour, which is F-R-A-S-H-O-U-R @gmail.com. And we have a Facebook page called the Fire Fresh Hour campaign.
For students who are organizing too, in the colleges, we have youthaltthecops@gmail.com, youthaltcops@gmail.com. And we've had a lot of support from the students, and we've had a lot of support from the citizenry. I mean, very seldom do we ever get someone who is against our position. There's a consensus that something needs to be done with the police association, and we want to be the facilitators, open up the dialogue as to what that would be.
Our phone number is 503-816-9205. I'll just say it again. It's 503-816-9205.
The next negotiation is going to be on October...
The 8th. October the 8th. We don't know the time or place yet. They've been happening from 9 to noon. We will be mobilizing people for the 8th, so if people call us, if they email us, if they find us on Facebook, we'll be able to let you know what's going on.
Thank you to Rahsaan Mohammed and Catherine Cates of the Fire Fresh Hour campaign. Circle A Radio comes to you each first and third Wednesday from 6 until 7 p.m. on KBOO. Tune in at 90.7 in Portland, 100.7 in Corvallis, 91.9 in Hood River, and streaming on the web at kboo.fm. You'll also find archives of our past broadcasts at kboo.fm/CircleA Radio. Thanks for your support during our fall membership drive, and thank you for listening.